Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to Inside F1 with Joe Sayward on Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Inside F1 with Joe Sayward on Missed Apex Podcast. This episode is called Guy Edwards Lives. Coming up this week, our USA GP race review will be at some time. It's either going to be late Sunday or Monday night. I'm not sure yet. Forgive us. We might have to delay until Monday night. And then stay tuned after tonight's regular program for part two of how me and Chris got on during our visit to GTS RS with Alex Brundle. Tonight, though, I'm joined by Paddock Master of Ceremonies, Joe. Let's get ready to rumble! Sayward. How's it going, Joe?
I can do without the getting ready to rumble thing. Yep. Anyway, I'm fine. Yep. Good.
Well, you're going to have to put up with it, presumably. Austin's going to do
No. They're changing the intros.
What? I love that. That was the best bit of last season.
Well, they're changing it.
Why? Why? Did they decide that, what, is it bad feedback?
I have no idea. I guess it must be something to do with feedback, but I understand it's going to be a bit different this year.
What, they're
going
to go full, like, British and just solemnly.
No, I don't think it worked awfully well last year. But we'll see. I don't know exactly what's going on. I was told that it's something to do with drivers peeing or something. They couldn't do the full intro they wanted to do, so they've been cancelled. Because drivers need to pee before races, so they go rushing off and they can't do all that sort of it's rumbling thing, you know.
Can't fight biology.
You can. Just tell them to do it 5 minutes earlier. But apparently they're darling prima donnas. And I understand the Bolshoi Ballet has the same problem. You know, they just got to dance off to the toilets each before it all starts, you know.
Well, they're going to spend 2 hours driving really fast racing cars. I'm going to allow it.
Well, they've got to get their tights in a twist, haven't they? So there you go.
But people can also go and see you when they're allowed to get up and go to the toilet anytime they want. Live an audience with Joe Sayward in Austin. Actually, loads of people have got in touch asking if you are putting it on, and indeed you are.
I am, Friday. Friday in the evening. Sign up right now. I can't remember how you do it, but it can't be that hard to look it up. It's called Flat Out Publishing.
But where is it? Is it in the track, or is it in a bar nearby?
No, it's in downtown Austin. It's at a restaurant. It's been on the blog. The audience will take place on Friday at Pennon's Tex-Mex Restaurant, 802 Red River Road. But don't turn up without a ticket. You need to buy them online beforehand.
You must order ahead.
And in order to do that, I'll give you the address. It's flatoutpublishing.com, austin-audience.html. And if you can't find that, what can I say?
But Joe, what is the atmosphere like in general? Because is that ceremony that they had, is that representative of how the Americans approach, you know, their Grand Prix atmosphere?
It's all crap, really. They were trying to just see if it was going to be sort of more exciting if you did it in a sort of boxing kind of way. And I think they discovered that it doesn't work. So we'll see what happens. I don't know what they're going to do this year, but I don't think it's going to be the same. But you know, Americans will like Formula One if American people are doing well. And that's the problem. Americans are, as we may have noticed with Donald Trump, it's America first. So if we can get someone who drives around in a car with an American flag on his forehead, it will be very successful. But, you know, Austin's it's a great circuit. It's a great town. And we have Haas. We haven't got any American drivers right now. I hope we'll get some soon. But if we don't, you know, you've got to be good. And that's the truth of it. Formula One is about being globally the best. And if you are a brilliant driver who happens to come from Papua New Guinea, you'll make it. Right now, we have 320 million Americans who haven't quite mastered it, but, you know, it's always a possibility. I'm looking forward to Nigerians and Chinese. They haven't made it either. There's a lot more of them out there. So, you know, it's really a matter of training. And, you know, you can't take away from the fact that you have to be properly prepared. And that's why Europeans tend to dominate, which why Brazilians have done in the past, blah, 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 blah. All the usual stories one hears. But, you know, Alexander Rossi could race Formula One cars if he was given the chance in a decent car. He could do it very well. But he hasn't had the chance. So there you go. It's the way it is.
But they do fill up the Austin Grand Prix circuit, don't they? Or is that just because they invite people like Justin Timberlake and such like to play there?
Well, it works, sort of. But I'm not sure that Austin has worked very hard on promoting Formula One. I think they promote the race meeting to make money. To be honest, Taylor Swift, Justin Timberlake, and whoever it is this year, is it Bruno Mars this year, or have we had him last year? I can't remember.
Ah, yeah, that rings a bell.
Not that I ever go to. The thing is, I never go to these concerts, so I don't know who it is, but I think it's Bruno Mars this year. And good for them for doing it. And if it works, it works. But I'd like them to promote Formula One in America, and I don't think they do that. I don't think that Taylor Swift, when she gets on the stage, knows anything other than, gee whiz, what is this Formula One thing? She knows someone's paying her a pile of money to be there, but, you know.
Well, I didn't bump
into her in the paddock anyway. Not that I would recognize her if I did bump into her, because I'm an old fart, of course, you know.
Sort of medium height, medium build, white.
Is she got a big nose thing, or what?
No, I don't know. I'll have to
you see, you can't do it either.
I was trying to make out like I was younger and cooler than you, but it's not happening.
You don't know who Taylor Swift is. All I know is that she dated a Kennedy, and I was around in Hyannisport, and she wasn't there. I don't know where she was. I was expecting to bump into her in the shops, as you do. But, to be honest, I don't know. I've not seen her on stage, but, you know, she seems like she sings a lot. So, good for her.
She definitely does seem to. Gary Gerhardt in the chat room agrees with you that Alexander Rossi needs to go back to F1, at least for the Americans to get involved. Actually, about 40% of our audience, Joe, is American. So you're talking directly to the people that F1 wants to attract.
Yeah, well, doesn't surprise me at all. I've been a huge fan of trying to build up F1 in America for years and years and years, and I've completely failed in every respect, I have to say. There are lots of opportunities that have come along, and there are more coming. And with Liberty Media, it's completely logical that they do this. And if people say, why is it logical? The answer is that America is the world's biggest consumer market. No matter what the Chinese may think, it will take 30 years before they catch up with America in terms of spending. And so right now we need to have American fans who go along and buy a pile of stuff. They go and buy Ferrari T-shirts. God help them. and buy enough Lewis Hamilton gear, whatever, you know, but at least they buy stuff and they go along and they watch it. So let's do more of that, and let's try and build it up, and let's get an American star. I mean, everybody wants to see one.
Well, Lewis Hamilton is sort of the closest thing we've got to an Americanized or even an American file star, and he was on Good Morning America, I think, this morning, trying to sort of big up F1.
Boy, yeah, good boy. He comes from Hartford, Hartford, Connecticut, I suppose.
Yes.
Or is there a place called Wellin or wherever he comes from in America? I doubt it. Stevenage, America. I don't think that exists. But no, he's he likes it over there. He feels very Americanized, if you like. And the more he can do, the better. I just wish that everybody else involved in Formula One would think a little bit more broadly. Most of them are so sort of obsessed with being big in Italy or whatever that it doesn't, you know, to be frank, Italy doesn't matter. Sorry, Ferrari fans, but the truth is your TV market is tiny in comparison to the world. So there's a world out there. Let's get Nigeria. Let's get India. Let's get China. These big countries. Indonesia, the fourth biggest country in the world. How many fans are there listening to this from Indonesia?
Okay, Steve, video editor, you've got that bit to clip out, yeah? So it's just in case the Ferrari fans don't hate us enough.
No.
Okay, good.
No, but I'm speaking mere truths. If you look at it in the numbers alone, our major target should be China. Or is it India? I can't remember which one's first. India, I think, maybe ahead of China. It should be India, China. It should be Nigeria. It should be Indonesia. America doesn't even rate. Russia is irrelevant. Britain is irrelevant if you're looking at TV audiences. No, it's true. If you're looking at TV audiences, the fact is we're not looking at just numbers, but these are are just the big numbers. So let's be realistic about this. If you're going after numbers, we have to go into areas where we're outside the comfort zone. And, you know, Stevenage, there may be lots of people who watch the Grand Prix in Stevenage, but believe me, there's a hell of a lot more in whichever Chinese city you want to name who will be watching it.
Please don't test my geography, Joe. Please, no.
No, there are 30 big cities in China that are way beyond anything that we know in the West. So let's get real and play with them.
Joe, I'm going to pay you a compliment because you wrote earlier a lovely tribute to F1 driver Guy Edwards. The only flaw in that plan being that Guy Edwards is in fine health, but you certainly weren't alone.
He's not in fine health. He's not well, and he hasn't been well for a very long time. But yes, I got sucked into it because I actually believed a colleague of mine, which I should never have done, who's been in Formula One 20 years longer than I have, which makes him 50 years in Formula One, who sent me a message saying Guy Edwards is dead. And I checked. I actually went to the bother of checking to make sure. I went to the BRDC. You'd think that was a reliable source, wouldn't you? And they had a thing saying Guy Edwards is dead. So I thought, well, okay, that's reasonable. That's generally what I do with any dead driver. I check them out to see if they're, if the BRDC says they're still with us. And so I was busy writing an obit, and I filed the obit, and 12 seconds later it disappeared because somebody smarter than me had been watching the internet and realized that Autosport, who is at the root of all this mess, had actually got it all wrong. And so I presumed that everyone else was following Autosport and we're just all sort of chasing each other's tails. But it's a very interesting case because people who one considers to be reliable cannot be considered reliable. It's a bit like American politics, to be frank. You know, you can't believe a word that's said. You actually have to go and find out more. So I think I've learned something today, which is don't trust anybody, which is kind of sad in a way because, you know, one does rely on sources a little bit.
But also, like, you're seen as a source as well. So it's quite a weight on your shoulders. Obviously, you, as a journalist, you want to report things. And then when your sources kind of misstep and make you misstep as well, it's a semi-serious subject, isn't it? It's not frivolous.
No, it's absolutely a serious subject because, I mean, usually if somebody who is, you know, if there's a reliable or what you think is a reliable source tells you something and you check it with another what you think is a reliable source and both of them have been conned.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a seriously worrying thing. So we're talking about a world of fake news. I mean, it doesn't matter in a lot of respects because everything is like that nowadays, but it shouldn't be. And so in the future, if somebody tells me someone's died, even if they're my best friend, I'm going to go and think, well, have they really? And you know, in the past, I've always used the same principle, which is somebody usually tells me someone's died, I check.
That means
you have to pick up the phone and ring somebody and say, hello, are you dead? Yeah. And that doesn't really work either, you know. So,
I mean, there's an amusing side to making that mistake, but I think I know you well enough to know that you take that seriously. If it makes you feel any better, on BBC local radio a couple of weeks ago, I got completely mixed up between David Essex and David Cassidy. But I kind of said, you know, sadly, David Essex passed away. And although everybody has had a wonderful laugh at my expense, and as soon as the F1 live stream came on for Missed Apex, it was any updates on David Essex, how's he doing? I actually felt really guilty because I'm relatively new to people caring what I do or say.
And but you're young enough not to know the difference between David Essex and David Cassidy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would know, to be honest. I mean, David Essex was a pretty boy who was in some film about the circus. And David Cassidy was a bloke who came from America, I think, but I couldn't tell you he was alive or dead.
Well, he was my...
And I don't care. Well, David Essex was everybody's mother's sweetheart. He was a pretty boy. And if I think hard enough, I can remember the name of the film that he was in, which made him such a sex symbol. But I doubt he looks like a sex symbol. I mean, we're talking 50 years ago here.
Now, I am assured by the many people who texted into the radio show that he is... not only alive and well, but is still a sex symbol, Joe. Gorgeous as ever, a lot of the ladies of Cambridgeshire informed me. But let's go on to some two more modern...
Well, maybe the ladies are older than they used to be, too.
Some more modern, gorgeous icons, Max Verstappen and Daniel Ricciardo, in their latest advert for Red Bull. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But they did this actually pretty cool Red Bull promo with them driving through America, finishing up in L.A. Should we read anything into that?
Yeah, they didn't do the whole thing. Well, it's very clear they didn't do the whole thing because it's 3,000 miles and Formula One cars don't drive 3,000 miles at a time. So they went to Continental Divide Speedway and had a refueling session there, and they did it on the beach in LA. So whoop-de-doo. It's a nice bit of work on behalf of Red Bull Media, and they do a great job and terrific, wonderful. But, you know, the day a Formula One car drives across America, I shall be asleep at the finish.
Well, I wasn't suggesting they really did it. I think it was more that they ended up in LA and everyone's talking about all these separate street circuits that might happen. Were they trying to hint what they might do in the future?
I doubt it. They were just trying to attract the audiences on the East and West Coast and the lot in the middle who nobody gives a f*** about.
Right, looks in dictionary.
Did I say the wrong thing?
I don't know. I'm going to have to look in my dictionary of broadcasting naughty words. But, Daddy, what is t-? Okay, right. So that's I've said it as well.
Okay, the whole bunch of people between the East Coast and the West Coast, all of whom seem to vote for Donald Trump. Have I caused trouble? Never mind. They may not actually watch any media that goes beyond their shorelines. The East and the West Coast probably recognize that Formula One is a form of racing. Everyone else thinks it's a hair tonic.
Oh, I see.
Which is probably what Donald uses to get that lovely sweep. I don't know. He uses Formula One.
I'm going to look right into the camera now and say, I have no strong opinions on American politics one way or the other. Let's talk about Red Bull Honda.
I have very
Honda.
Strong opinions on American politics because they're messing up the world, but enough of that.
Ooh, yes, please, Joe. Let's talk about Red Bull, because we are on Red Bull.
They're not messing up the world apart from in a digestive sense.
Well, let's talk about Red Bull Honda's chances for next year then, because, you know, Cyril...
Dunk.
Well, Cyril, old Cyril, buddy from Renault, reckons... Well, he was complaining basically about the amount of money that people have to spend to be competitive, and he reckons that Honda have caught up with them. But, I mean, if Honda are a force next year, then Red Bull are going to be a force next year. And I think everyone's genuinely excited, stroke curious.
I think that's fair enough. I think that the Honda have had enough years to screw up that it's time they got it right. They spent a lot of money. I think that Renault have had a lot of years to screw it up, and they haven't spent enough money. So they're in the same situation. So I think we'll see next year... the same kind of situation, really, with Mercedes, Ferrari, when they're not falling over their own shoelaces. Probably second, with Red Bull third, mainly because of the chassis is very good. Renault are not able to, apparently not able to improve the engine. It's something to do with being able to hire people to go and work in France. That's one of the problems. No, it's true. I mean, I live in France. I love France. But you try and convince engine designers to go live in France is another story.
I remember Alain Prost on the official Formula One podcast, boo, was talking about how really he needed his team to be based in the UK. And I guess a lot of teams face that conundrum as well.
Sorry, which team would that be? Alain Prost owns a team I don't know about.
Well, he did in the before time. He called it Prost.
Oh, Prost, a million years ago. Yeah.
In the long, long ago. I beg your pardon.
Well, that is quite a long time ago. Like, it's like 20 years ago. And if he'd been really smart, he wouldn't have set up a team in France, because it was obvious at that point that's not what you do. So if you want to be a French team, you base it in England, which is what Renault have done, to be fair. But their engine organization is based in France. So they're kind of stuck there. They can't move all these Gauloise-smoking, garlic-eating chaps over to Brackley, because it doesn't work. But there's a lot of knowledge in France. There's a lot of expertise. But not enough, clearly, because they're being beaten. So, you know, you need to find a way. And Ferrari have found a way by just being Ferrari and offering pasta a lot. And, you know, people will go to Ferrari. But Toyota tried it in Cologne, and let's face it, he wants to go to Cologne.
We've got a couple of chat room comments here, Joe. And if you want to join this live chat room, go to YouTube and search Missed Apex Podcast. Subscribe, click the little bell. You'll get a notification every time we go live, generally on Sunday nights. Simon's Every Day says, why won't Renault invest properly? And Human Shield 777, it's quite a dark name that, says, with Cyril making noises about costs already, is it too early to read into Renault thinking twice about their F1 project?
The second point, I don't think that's really relevant. I think Cyril needs to look after his own job, so he's saying that. But I think they're committed to 10 years in Formula One. Although Cyril, to be fair, has said to me that, you know, the first boss of a Formula One team never makes it. It's always the bloke who comes second. So I think he's sort of looking over his shoulder. But he's a smart enough guy to understand that. But, you know, the fact is that Viry Châtillon may not be the most glamorous place in the world, and getting English and or any other nationality to go work there is not easy. So I'm actually speaking as a French resident. Viry Châtillon's not so bad. I mean, you know, if you've been to some of the places in England, Northampton, it's hardly glamorous, is it?
I'm losing track of all the places that you've slated tonight, Joe. Stevenage, Northampton,
I haven't slated
Middle
anywhere,
America.
What I'm saying is that, okay, the biggest problem probably we're going to Viry Châtillon is that people don't speak French, but I speak French, so it's all right. And I don't feel the same way. But if you are an international person and you have to choose between Viry Châtillon and Northampton, and you speak both languages, I find it hard to know the difference, to be honest. I mean, to be fair, Viry Châtillon is closer to Paris than Northampton is closer to London or anywhere glamorous, really. So I don't know. I think it's, I mean, let's face it, you go to Maranello because it's Ferrari and it's supposed to be sexy. And if you wear prancing horse underwear, apparently all the girls jump on you. I don't know how it works. But whatever it is, they're willing to go there.
Interesting question from the chat again. Do Renault work with other builders like Cosworth or Ilmor? And if not, why not?
Well, because they're French. Why would they work with Cosworth or Ilmor, who are not in Formula One? And to be quite honest, because they're not in Formula One, have sort of ceased to be on the same level as everybody else.
All right, so just going back to Red Bull Honda then. Obviously, you've got your fingers in every pie, Joe. Every single pie. Are they feeling positive? Are they feeling positive about their decision? And like, what's happened to Aston Martin and all those things? Because everyone was talking about this Red Bull engine project.
It's all gone. So that's all gone. It's too much money. The new regulations that were proposed were far too expensive. When everyone priced it out, they all went and stopped their programs, including Porsche, including Aston Martin, including McLaren. Everyone just went, it's $500 million. We can't afford that. So there is now no reason to have a new engine formula. And as there's no reason to have an engine formula, it's completely insane to have one. So, because otherwise all you're doing is making everybody who's involved pay more money. And it also means that everyone will, the richest ones will get ahead. So in other words, we'll just perpetuate Mercedes winning. So the best thing to do is to freeze the regulations as they are. And everyone will close up. And if they close up, then there's more chance of somebody coming in because, one, it costs less than it would have done otherwise. And secondly, the technology is out there and people will be able to hire people who know the answers. Now, Honda hasn't done that because they're Honda, and that's bonkers. But, you can go out there, and if you have enough money, you throw it at the top man, and 2 years later, he's working for you. Unless there's someone, you know, who likes living in Northampton. Which out there, there are some people who like living in Northampton.
Well, surely Lawrence Stroll must like living in Northampton then, if he's bought up Force India. And speaking of teams that are not short of a bob or two, surely Force India now is rolling in money.
Hang on. Lawrence Stroll lives in Geneva or Lausanne or somewhere in Switzerland.
What are you telling me? He's not relocating to Northampton?
No.
What?
Oddly enough, he's not moving into... well, he might be. Who knows? He might buy a house somewhere near Silverstone. There's lots of nice houses there, but somehow I don't think that's going to happen because you have to pay tax if you do that. And so, no, it's just, you know, the way of the world, really. But in motor racing terms, if there is a cluster, you must go to the cluster. You don't try and create a cluster of your own. It's ridiculous. If you want to make marmalade, you go to Dundee. Don't ask me why, but you do. You don't go to Merthyr Tydfil. That's what it boils down to. So you look at the methods that are employed and the people you can get, and you go where the expertise is. Now, in France, there is expertise in engines around Paris. There's expertise in engines around Maranello. And there's expertise around Northampton. Now, is Northampton a good choice compared to Maranello or Paris? Who knows? But lots of people who come from England don't want to go to them foreign parts where they don't eat toast with Marmite on, you know.
A big hello to all our Northampton residents. Thanks for tuning in for your third insult of the show.
No, it's not. That's not an insult at all. I'm just saying this is human nature. If you go to France where they think Marmite is some kind of poison and you've grown up eating Marmite, it is. You see, you're pulling a face.
Yeah, because Marmite's disgusting and horrible. And anyone who likes it.
In that case, you should be French because they don't like it either. Yeah. But the fact is that people who do like Marmite, you know, or whatever, the fact is it's foreign, it's nasty, it's all these things you're not used to. And English people, you may not have noticed what's going on in the world, but English people like living on their island all by themselves. And that is Formula One is largely based in England, but there's a certain element of Brexitis, whatever the word is anyway.
Okay, Joe, I'm just going to fade you down there while I look into the camera once more and say, I have no strong opinion on Brexit one way or the other.
No, but it doesn't really matter whether they're Brexiting or not. The fact is that Formula One is based in Britain. Now, is that going to change? Probably not, because all the expertise and the talent is in Britain. And those who want to make it go to Britain and have to put up with Marmite and baked beans. But, you know, a lot of them have got more advanced taste than that. Maybe, dare I say such a thing? You know, they eat maigret de canard avec un peu de ci et peu de ça. And they don't drink beer, they drink wine, you know, and all these sort of things that are silly things, but that's what quality of life is all about. They know what a cep is as opposed to a mushroom, you know.
What's up with you tonight, Joe? This is classic Saywood. This is what you get on the live events. This is the Joe you get on the live events. I love it. Why don't you tell me, though? Tell me, what is the master plan at Force India? Where he's going to live aside, is he actually going to grasp Force India and push them forward? It's a team that's promised so much for years. It's built up a lot of goodwill. Is he going to just do it? Just make it a top five?
No, the fundamental premise of Force India is to find his son a drive. No. Obviously, after that, he wants to make it good because his son's driving for them. Okay? So he's going to pour money in and make it as good as he can. But winning in Formula One is not something that even billionaires can afford to do. So the best he can hope for is fourth. And what he hopes for is that his son will do well enough to be picked up by one of the three big teams, which I can let you know in advance is probably not going to happen.
It's not?
No, sure. I wouldn't have thought so. Judging by what I've seen thus far, I can't imagine that Lance Stroll is one of the six fastest drivers in Formula One.
Yeah. I tend to sadly agree with you. So you think that is a dead-end project? What happens when Lance gives up on his F1 dream? Is that the end of Lawrence Stroll's investment as well?
Who knows? Who knows? I don't really understand. I've never understood the whole process. I mean, good for him for supporting his son and all the rest of it, but I just don't really get the whole concept of where it's going. It's a good investment, if you like. But, you know, if you're going to invest in places that doesn't involve your son necessarily, because it just makes the whole thing, it personalizes it. Look at Latifi. Mr. Latifi is a very rich man. He's invested in McLaren. Not to get his son in there because he thinks it's a good investment. Needs a lot of work. McLaren is a bit of a mess at the moment, but he's probably right. And his son will make it or not make it on his own merits. And you know, that's, I think, if you're going to help your son along, it's a bad idea at this level because everybody's going to be looking at you under the microscope and saying, he hasn't done it, he has done it, whatever. No, we don't even know if Lance really wants it, you know. Esteban says he does, but then again, Esteban is looking for a drive for next year, so he's going to be nice to everybody. So we'll see.
We're going to come back to Joe Saward after this word from our sponsors.
Our sponsors.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Joe, aside from the negativity of pay drivers, we hear a lot about that. And also, in recent seasons, in recent decades, in fact, we've kind of felt like there was a lot of the old guard occupying F1 seats for ages. It feels like we've waited forever for this glut of new F1 talent. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, with Charles Leclerc leading it into the top six, we've suddenly got all these new drivers flooding into Formula One. And of course, the latest of which is the one hand on the F2 title, championship leader George Russell, to Williams, as you predicted quite some time ago.
What can I say? There are still, I wouldn't say they're dead wood. They've been around for a long time. They're still capable of doing good things. But, you know, when you get into your late 30s, you have other priorities in life. And so the Alonsos and the Raikkonens of this, well, Raikkonen's still going to be there, which is kind of depriving a youngster of another drive, to be honest. Alonso is going to go. But after that, you're getting into Lewis territory as being the most senior driver.
Yeah.
And I think he is the third most senior driver these days. But Formula One is all about wacky young guys. And then the problem is that, I mean, it's not a problem. It's a good thing in many respects. But in the old days, there was a turnover of drivers because they died. That's a terrible thing to say. But that's a reality. Nowadays, they have careers lasting 15 years, and that's not good for the sport in some respects because you get the same old faces over and over again. You get the Rubens Barrichellos and you know, this kind of guys who just go on forever. Now, they think they're good enough, and actually, they kind of prove it from time to time that they are good enough. But sometimes it's good to have new blood. You know, I don't know how you fix it in the modern age. Maybe you have a 10-year limit from the day you come in to the day you're allowed to go out. You know, maybe, the day you're allowed to go out. That's not the right expression.
Retire.
But basically, you could have a 10-year limit. That might be one way of doing it. Why not? Because 10 years, if you haven't made it in 10 years, you're never going to make it, are you? So And if you have made it, if you've won one championship, fair enough, you know, fluked it or whatever. But there is a fundamental problem, which is called survival, that Formula One never had before. And we've now got that problem. And I think that we have to, you know, do top level boxers last for 15 years? I don't know. I never watched boxing, to be honest, but it's not my kind of thing. Watching people beat each other's brains out is not my idea of fun. But do their careers last 15 years? Do top athletes last 15 years? The answer is no, they don't. In Formula One drivers, they can, but maybe they shouldn't be allowed to.
Is there any room for, and I'm not suggesting this is a serious suggestion, but because in other sports, there's lower tiers. If you had a second grid of Formula One, people would kind of bounce between those levels as they did well and fight for relegation and promotion. But it's almost like a drama series where they pick their superstars and keep them for this period of time because they know they're marketable and they're kind of characters in the series, almost like they're scared to refresh it.
Yeah, but are they characters? I mean, is Sebastian Vettel a character? To be honest, Sebastian Vettel has deliberately gone about not making himself a character. He's very much wallpaper in Formula One. No, he is. He's wallpaper. he's a very good driver, but he is, in terms of, what do we know about Sebastian Vettel? He lives in Switzerland, has a wife and some children. We're not quite sure how many at any given time because he doesn't want anyone to know. Sorry, that's part of the job. You're supposed to have the kids there in victory lane. Go watch NASCAR, you know. Everyone, you know, when a guy wins NASCAR, the kids are there, the wife's there, they're all sort of bobbling about and having a jolly time. And you know, that's actually what it's about. It's about show business. It's all very well protecting yourself because that's your private life. But hell, 10 years is enough for that.
So not a fan of Felipe Massa, really, but the stuff with his little kid coming in and him showing himself as a family man and a racer were actually quality. I really enjoyed all that.
I love Felipe. He's a great guy, but he didn't need to be around for all the years he was around for. we have to look at it and we have to be a little bit brutal about it and just say, well, what's best for the sport? And the answer is, 10 years is good enough. If you're good enough in 10 years, you're going to get into a top team. If you're not good enough, you just troll around in the second teams. And, you know, you're good enough to be I'm going to be mean here now.
But, yeah, go on.
You know, Nico Hülkenberg. He's a great guy and a great driver, but he's never, ever broken through into a seat that will win him a world championship. Mm-hmm. Is he going to now?
Let's have a look at the chat room. Dub Royal, more teams. More seats, that's what they want, and I agree with that.
Yeah, but more teams doesn't work because more teams doesn't mean competitive teams. More teams mean a bunch of trolls at the back.
Fair enough. EMH2212, Sebastian Vettel is less wallpaper and more a series of broken bottles sitting on the mantelpiece next to the prized family photo of Hamilton. Ooh, very harsh. And European, the new generation of drivers...
Fair enough. That's an absolutely fair comment because Vettel has been shown up by Lewis in the last couple of years. He'd just been rooted, if you like. He was good in his era. He won his four championships, Red Bull, not under any great pressure. But now he's under pressure, he's falling apart. So, you know, great, terrific, time to go.
And Dan L says, I'm a Vettel fan. I support him being 100% private. And European says the new generation of drivers will do that very well. Just wait a couple of years. I think he's talking about the personality. And pre-show, we were talking with the chat room about one of these guys had done an iRace, like an online sim race, with Lando Norris. And he is really forthcoming with all that social media and interaction. He's always streaming some selfie video of himself answering questions. He's fantastic for that.
Yeah, he is. And that's another generation. The world has changed. You know, Sebastian Vettel, as far as I know, doesn't even have any kind of social media worth talking about. So, hello, where are we in the real world? I mean, you know, Lewis is social media'd up. It's what the sport needs. And we have to look at what the sport needs as much as what, you know, who is best. Vettel is not best. You know, he can't win in a Ferrari. And he's had the best car this year. To be quite honest, he's had the best car for half the year and he's blown it. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily all his fault. What I'm saying is that if there is some kind of artificial boundary to how long you can be, it's not a boundary. If you arrive in Formula One at 28 years old, you can stay till you're 38. But if you arrive at 17, you've got to get the hell out at 27. I don't think that's a bad idea. I think that a 10-year period in which you can be, and, you know, when all else fails, you can go off and play in sports cars a la Alonso.
Wait a minute, Joe, you're not suggesting, are you, like a Logan's Run style carousel for drivers? Once they've been in Formula One for 10 years, we have to whip them up into the carousel and sack them?
Yeah, I am.
Oh.
Well, because in the old days, they would have died after 10 years in Formula One. So we've got to find a way of keeping the sport alive, as opposed to having what effectively amounts to very talented dead wood. We have to find a way, because the world is changing, we have to find a way to keep everyone amused. You know, okay, Coronation Street has the same characters 25 years later, one or two of them, you know, but soap operas need new characters all the time. And if you can't make it in 10 years, you're never going to make it. Okay, if you're maybe there should be an allowance for beating Michael Schumacher's record. How's the chat room doing? Has it gone mad?
Well, let's put it this way. I am now texting a friend of the show, Peter Wright, Digital Law UK, because he basically acts as the show's lawyer. There might be some ageism suits coming your way, Joe.
No, I don't believe that at all. I think it's what, ageism or deadism? I mean, you know, what's the difference? The fact is that in the old days, there was a natural mechanism that kept Formula One drivers young. Yep. There is no reason why you cannot have a limit.
And also, they used to start later as well, didn't they?
Yes, they did used to start later. And you know, one has to think about these things because you have to compete. As a sport, you have to compete. So I'm not saying this is necessarily the right answer, but it should be a discussion that should be going on.
I like it. I like the discussion point of it. It's a good, what do you call it? It's a good thought exercise, isn't it? So,
I'm sure you couldn't get it through with all the lawyers and the people in the fluorescent vests these days. You know, little old ladies should be allowed to race in Formula One, according to the politically correct among us. But the fact is that we have to also make it a sport that is some. I mean, little old lady would probably do a lot of good for the sport, but I don't see any of them being fast enough, to be honest.
Chat room. You're hilarious, but naughty. Stop it. How good can Esteban Ocon really be if Mercedes have gone ahead, and I'm making a big assumption there, if Mercedes have gone ahead and pushed for George Russell to take the Williams seat? Have I got any of that wrong?
Yeah. The George Russell getting the Williams seat is not about him being pushed ahead of Esteban Ocon. It's about him being in the right place at the right time. Williams is the right place for George. It's not the right place for Esteban, but Esteban has no other choices. So if they can get him in at Williams, they will, because there's no choice. If they can't get him in at Williams, they'll put him as a test driver, a reserve driver, whatever you want to call it, and they'll put him into the main team next year. But now, Esteban shouldn't have to be at Williams, but that's the way things have turned out. Now, the guy shook hands on a Renault deal, and they sort of forgot about that later. So
We've got more space, though. This is the most exciting transfer season, silly season we've had for years and years. Now, Joe, you have been...
But shouldn't it be like this every year?
You're making a really good case, actually. Yeah, you're right. You're making a good case because the excitement of the driver moves has been incredible. And you have been somewhat of an oracle this season. Like, we give you a lot of stick behind your back. I mean, no, forget that. Disregard that, Joe. But you can't deny this season you've had your finger on the pulse of the driver moves. People called you mad when you said Carlos Sainz to McLaren. You know, everyone collectively just went, huh? When you were on Sky Sports. So we're going to pay attention now when you say to me that Albon is lined up for that Toro Rosso seat. Everyone's thinking Dan Ticktum, that was their aim. People are even looking at Formula E drivers, Buemi to come back. What makes you think that Thai Brit Albon is coming to Toro Rosso?
Because I talk to people in Formula One.
And what is your spider sense telling you, your Sayward sense?
My Sayward sense is telling me that Alexander Albon is going to be in the second Toro Rosso. And I believe I've heard, I don't know if it's true, I haven't checked it out, and nowadays you have to check out everything, as we learned today with Guy Edwards. But yep. I'm told today that Wehrlein has got a deal with Mahindra in Formula E. Poor soul. And that means he's off that market. Now, in theory, Albon has a deal with Nissan to race in Formula E, but that doesn't preclude you. If a Formula One team comes to you and says, we want you, Nobody in their right mind is going to drive a Nissan Formula E for 3 years if they can drive a Formula One car. Because there is nothing to be said for driving a Nissan Formula E apart from the money. Formula One is all about performance. Formula E, as I've told you many times, nobody, I'm going to upset all the green people out there, but Formula E is a bunch of promotion. It is not a reality that will survive for long. And I know Nico Rosberg says they're going to merge, but Nico Rosberg's a shareholder in Formula E, so he would say that, wouldn't he? So, you know, the fact of the matter is that Formula E is a well-promoted bag of wind, which may or may not survive a few years after the manufacturers start pulling out. Because they will start pulling out. It's inevitable. Once they all go in, they'll all start pulling out after they think that the diesel crisis is over and they're getting beaten by Porsche or Mercedes, whoever it is that's winning, one of the two will be. And then Formula One will look much more attractive at that point because you can't have that many manufacturers in a series that doesn't really make sense. And in the automotive world, Formula E doesn't make sense. Sorry, but you know, anyone who gets up and says it, we're not allowed to say it, but the carbon footprint of Formula E is no better than any other championship. An electric car is no better than a petrol car.
I'm just going to interrupt Joe there to say, do tune in to E-Radio Show, hosted by Matt Trumpet's E-Radio Show, covering season 5 of the Formula E season. E-Radio is a Mist Apex production. Search E-Radio on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Joe, you know I'm going to edit out all of you saying bad stuff about Formula E. Formula E is about to
I will go on saying it because it's a fallacy. It is based on false foundations. Formula E is not electric cars are not the future. Hydrogen cars maybe, but electric cars are not the future. And until they find a way of getting around the battery problems, they're not going to be the future. Formula One, the hybrid car, the hybrid engine, is still a better choice.
I'm just going to take tomorrow off to answer emails. So email me, spannersready@gmail.com. I do love hearing what you have to say. Also, you can comment on the site post at mistapexpodcast.com. And we always appreciate you sharing the episodes. I hope you're enjoying this one too. So it's going to be, you reckon, Albon at Toro Rosso. Alongside Kvyat as well. And the chat room pointing out it's quite amazing. There's only going to be two teams that retain their lineup between 2018 and 2019.
I hadn't even thought of that, but yes, probably the case. Mercedes being one and the other one being I can't work it out.
Haas, I guess.
Haas. Oh, thank you. Yes, Haas. Yes, Haas. Quite. Haas, by the way.
Tell me.
I'd just like to point out that Haas is a remarkable organization. Because not only is it doing remarkably well for a customer team in Formula One, but it is utterly dominating in NASCAR. Last weekend's Talladega, they ran 1-2-3-4 for most of the race. And in NASCAR, that is an unheard of thing. So we're talking about a racing organization that is doing exceptionally well in two championships at the same time. And that's a pretty rare thing in the modern era, anyway.
Good. I've got a couple of other things I want to ask you, and the chat room's just reminded me as well. My boss, who is an F1 fan, he turned around to me and he said that there is going to be a race-off again between Sergei Sorokin and Robert Kubica for that other Williams seat. Lots of people are excited. Is that true?
No. Because why would you imply either one of them?
Oh! Hey, hang on, I've missed a step. What, you don't think either of those guys are up for it?
Oh, I think that they're both potentially going to end up there. That doesn't mean they're the best person for the job. The best person for the job is Esteban Ocon. There's no question about it, but it's about money. Now, Williams don't necessarily want to have Sorokin for two reasons. One is because he hasn't done anything spectacular this year, and two is because he's backed by people who are on lists of sanctioned companies. The other one is Robert Kubica, who, if he'd been good enough to do the job, would have been hired by Renault 18 months ago. He wasn't good enough. They let him go nicely. They didn't say nasty things about him. They just said, off you go. We don't want you. And he ended up at Williams as a reserve driver. If he was good enough, then he'd be in the drive now.
Yeah.
But he's not. And the fact is, as much as I thought Robert was a genius driver when he was young, Robert crashed a car, smashed himself up, hurt himself, did himself irreparable harm. Now, if it's reparable, I take it back. But if it was reparable, he'd be in a car now.
Call me soft.
You can't argue it.
I know.
I agree with you. Call it soft. It's a Cinderella story. It's wonderful. It's fairy tales. It's bloody blah. But the fact is that Formula One is not a world of fairy tales. It's a bunch of hard making decisions. And the hard are saying Robert Kubica is not good enough.
May I ask, with your revelation that you strongly believe that Albon is taking that second Toro Rosso seat, what happened to Dan Ticktum? Has he been completely gazumped?
He doesn't have a super license.
But they were appealing it, weren't they?
End of story. He does not have a super license. He didn't beat Mick Schumacher. And obviously, nobody rates Mick Schumacher highly enough to give him a Formula One drive straight away. Or maybe they rate him, but think he needs more time. And even if Dan Ticktum had won the championship, he needs more time because he's shown a number of sort of very strange habits in his career to date, which need to be ironed out if he's going to make it in Formula One. You don't go overtaking people behind the safety car and 10 cars, then crash into somebody because you're pissed off with them. Sorry, if you're annoyed at them, you don't do that. And you know, this is not the behavior of a stable Formula One driver. So Ticktum, at best, if he's going to make it at all, needs a couple of years to calm down and stop being a hot head.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And but I think that's the same with Mick Schumacher. You know, he suddenly worked out how to do it halfway through the season, won a whole bunch of races. But that doesn't mean he's ready to leap two stories up from Formula 3 into Formula 1 and take on the big guys. And, you know, maybe there's lots of... I mean, Formula 1, to be honest, would be delighted to have a Schumacher on board because it's good promotional value.
Yes.
But he's only good promotional value if he wins.
Mirror 303 IFY says Joe hasn't insulted the Dutch yet and he feels left out.
I'll do it. Don't worry.
Oh, it's good. I wanted to spend all night editing. It's great.
No, this has been amazing. I love the Dutch. They're great. They're a great lot. They're a little bit, you know, they have very set views like me. But actually, having set views is actually right sometimes because I think I've done something here. Hang on. Does that work? Oh, yeah. I'm on again.
Just don't touch buttons, Joe.
Well, it's just there. You know, what can I do? No, they... There's nothing wrong with having strong opinions if they are founded on sensible logic. And this is, you know, nowadays we all have to, as I said before, wear fluorescent jackets and have no opinion at all. And I'm not interested in that. We haven't even talked about the W series. I'd like to talk about that.
Oh, Joe, hang on a minute. There's some kind of fuzz and interference.
Missed the apex.
Yeah, I'm just going to play that in advance. Christopher Fonseca is giving me an award for achievements in editing, which presumably the people listening on the podcast will be hearing and will wonder what all the fuss was about. I will say, don't rely on me posting or Joe posting the links to the episodes. Go to your podcatcher, iTunes, or on Android, try Pocket Cast or Dogcatcher, and actually subscribe. Make sure it gets delivered to you, and then you're supporting us over the winter months when you can't be bothered to listen to all our quizzes and stuff as well. All right then, Joe. Deep breath, everybody. Here we go. Joe Sayward, what do you think about the obviously well-intentioned W Series?
Well, it's been done before. It was done in the 1920s, and it didn't work then. So why it's going to work now is beyond my comprehension. But if they want to spend their money trying to promote races, that's up to them. My view is that races who are good enough will promote themselves and get to the top of the tree. The argument with W Series is that they will help lady races to get to a level which they can do that. But to be quite honest, I don't really understand the logic in that. Because all they'll do is they'll race against each other, and the level will be lower than racing against the men. So when they come out of the W Series, which is in effect Formula 3 anyway, they won't be well prepared to take on the Formula 3 drivers they could have been racing otherwise. So, yeah, good for them for trying. And I can see why people have jumped on the bandwagon. It's a very nice sort of bandwagon to be jumping on. But I don't see it being a long-term championship, to be honest. You can wish it to be. I want there to be more Formula One racing drivers who are women.
Yep.
But the fact is that to be in Formula One, you've got to be good enough. You've got to be well prepared. You've got to have all these things. And, you know, I've seen girls who are good enough and well prepared who didn't make it. And I don't think this is going to add to that. So it's up to them. It's their money.
I have an opinion.
Jolly good.
I think it will have commercial value if done correctly. And you have to imagine the people putting money into it also think that. I doubt whether this is a purely, a philanthropic endeavor. Somebody has seen some value in this, surely.
So, does everybody in the world watch British Formula 3?
No, but...
On telly?
No.
Is it that exciting?
No, I get where you're driving at, but I think the angle, if marketed correctly, in this day and age, in this current environment, has some marketability. And they might be wrong, but obviously somebody has seen some potential in it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing it. And they have only committed to six races in the first season.
To be quite honest, it's private equity money, and this is a long shot. And if it works, they might make a pile of money. The chances are it won't work, but these kind of guys, 3, 5, 10 million is nothing. Peanuts. I don't really see how it can work, because it just doesn't. It has no more interest than British F3. Apart from the fact they're all girls.
Of course, I respect your opinion. I disagree. I think it has some value because there's more willingness than ever to get more women into the position that people feel they already should be and are being are being unnaturally held back from.
I don't disagree with that, but the point is that they have an advantage. Women have an advantage already, if they're good enough, in that they can raise money that good men cannot raise. Now, the fact is, because women haven't raised money, doesn't necessarily mean it's because they're women. It means they're not good enough. And, you know, one has to balance the two. I know you're not allowed to say that, but the fact is that when women say it's very hard for us to raise money, I go to myself, well, why? Because you have a lot of things in your favor, and therefore the one factor that you cannot guarantee is the fact that you're going to achieve things that men can't. And if you can't beat the men, the reason to invest in you is not there. So, you know, good for them for trying if that's what they think is going to work, but I just think it's a sort of kind of segregation that I don't think is going to work. But that's just my opinion.
And you're entitled to it, Joe. And you always give it generously. And we do really appreciate it. You are, of course, at Joe Sayward on Twitter. You're more of a Twitter man. You don't really do the Facebooks and the Instagram. You're not there taking photos of your food and such like.
Well, if I could do Instagram, I would. But unfortunately, I've lost the password.
All right.
And I can't get it back because I've forgotten the recovery email. So basically, Instagram is a completely rubbish organization that you can't do anything about. If you get into a mess, there's no one to talk to. There's no one you can ring up because you ring up and they go, oh, my God, it's like totally impossible. That's a machine saying that.
Good.
Know, so
that's our American friends insulted with yet another fantastic
service. I'm not insulting American friends. I'm insulting fools at Instagram who don't have a helpline. Anyway, whatever.
Whatever.
That's good. Those are good books.
I'm holding up books that I definitely wasn't using to prop up my speakers earlier. But these are fascinating facts in two volumes. Highly recommended. Spanner's stamp of recommendation, if that counts for anything.
And Christmas is coming.
These are perfect stocking fillers for F1 fans. So it's F1 fascinating facts, all little bite-sized, chapter-sized facts on Formula One, and they can be purchased on Joe's website and also flatoutpublishing.com. Have I got that right?
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Not too bad, that. And make sure you join Joe in Austin if you're going to be there for the US Grand Prix. Joe, thank you very, very much for your time. Guys who are listening, we will catch up with you for our USA GP race review. Until then, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex with Joe and Spanners. Thanks for tuning in to Inside F1 with Joe Sayward. This was Missed Apex Podcast, hosted by me, Spanners Ready. Follow me at Spanners Ready on Twitter, or just search Spanners Ready anywhere on the internet. What you're going to hear now is a recording from the middle part of our race experience at GTS RS Simulation, who were kind enough to look after us. Alex Brundle took me and Chris Stevens down there to do a bit of sim racing. Listen in and enjoy. Here we are at GTS RS Racing Simulation. Last week we were talking to Alex Brundle. He's here coaching us. Hello, Alex.
Hello, guys. How are you?
You set out your expectations of what we might be like as idiot drivers, and one of us without even a driving license. We've had a go in the simulator. First of all, Chris, that was the most incredible simulator experience I've ever had. I spent the first three laps just going, oh my God, this is incredible. Why would you ever do anything else?
Exactly. And meanwhile, Alex is trying to give you instructions on how to go quicker, and you can't stop thinking about how awesome this sim is.
All right, Alex, obviously you've had a look at us, and I was being far too overconfident beforehand and assuming Chris would be an idiot. It's not really worked out like that.
Well, I thought you were both good, to be honest. My expectations were blown away, frankly, by your competence.
You.
The basic lines are all good, and loads of the pitfalls that normal people have who've driven cars on the road, maybe even fast cars on the road, who then jump in a sim or on a track, were not there.
So, well, go on then, give me an example of some of those pitfalls.
So both of you were braking hard enough, because obviously most people in their daily driving have servo-assisted brakes and nothing else. Which one of you that said the brakes are like hitting a brick?
Yes,
or
like pushing against the wall.
It's a lot harder.
Even with ABS on, you have to hit the pedal even harder, because obviously you can't lock. So it's just a case of maxing out braking force all the way into the slow corners.
So first impressions of me in the car.
Okay, so Spanners, you are a little bit too active on the steering wheel. I think you were just really, 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 really excited.
I was so excited.
and so some of the initial applications of steering were aggressive. And then, of course, there'd be the slide and then the overcorrection and the slide, and you were sort of having a bit of a waltz, having
so
a bit
I'm
of a dance.
So I'm turning in too aggressively?
A little bit too aggressively. It's the biggest difference, I would say, between you and Chris, is that Chris has that sort of like a little bit of a kinder turn in the initial application.
So just remember, it's not a go-kart. We are looking here at a racing car.
So you need to take a little bit of time to let the weight of the thing, because you're also not in a Formula One car. So you've got to manage the weight of the chassis as it rolls. That was your main pitfall, especially in places where, you know, you have direction change. So you have to have the weight to roll one way, then the other way, then the other way. And that was catching you out big time with the rear.
How about the actual braking distance? Because it's incredibly hard to judge where you're supposed to brake, and we're just taking a good stab at it. Generally, too early, too late?
No, you're both in pretty much the right place in most of the big stops. When you do have ABS, you know, being hard and late on the brakes is not too difficult. The real technical stuff comes when you're braking sort of down into Brooklands and you're having to brake and turn. And again, that smoothness on the steering wheel does help brake later and also turn in, because you get less aggro from the rear of the car.
Okay, so it's a strong start from Chris. What's his best attribute? Because we actually give Chris quite a lot of abuse on this show. What's
Unfairly.
Chris doing? What? No, come on. You cart like a very small toad.
But look at how my technique in a cart has proved in a proper racing car.
At the moment, I'm 3 seconds behind, so I have absolutely no answer. But where is he strong?
Line and choice of turning point is very strong. And then obviously you've got, from there onwards, the throttle application happens by itself. The place where Chris can improve, I would say, is attacking in with that now. Although you were a little bit aggressive on the entry speed, as in getting off the brakes sometimes, I think you can brake a little bit later.
I tell you what, with the immersion in there and the fact you feel like you're in a real cockpit, I got freaked out when the owner opened the door when we were finished, because I was, why is there a human? It's so immersive. I mean, obviously to us it's immersive, but how does it feel to you as somebody who goes round in sports cars?
Well, absolutely. That's why, you know, pro race car drivers come and train here. It's because it's you know, it's an immersive experience, and it feels real. You get that pressure of feeling like you're in a race car moving. And like you say, when somebody does open the door, it's like, well, wait, hold on a minute.
This isn't right. Where are the crowds?
Running refuel.
You thought that broke your immersion. You stood basically on the front left corner of the car to film some stuff.
Yeah, well, now you've broken the fourth wall. Look, if you want to see some more footage, you can, of course, go to gtsrs.co.uk, or you can find our coverage of it on our YouTube channel by going to YouTube and searching Missed Apex Podcast. Catch us next week to see if I can claw back this deficit. And if I don't, there might not be a show.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.